From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1984 on the final day of the Democratic National Convention in San Francisco. Hollywood director James L. Brooks had a new project in mind, and he wanted to talk to people who work in the television news industry. Brooks saw the rising power of broadcast news, the celebrity that was attached to the on-air talent. He saw the opportunity for broadcast news to influence millions more viewers. He saw money, fame, power. So that week, he spent a lot of time with CBS, people like Leslie Stahl, and then CBS News producer Susan Zirinsky. The film he created wasn't released until late 1987, and the main character, played by Holly Hunter, is in many ways a portrayal of the producer Susan Zirinsky. The film was called Broadcast News. It was nominated for a pile of Oscars, and Jonathan Rosenbaum, in his review for the Chicago Reader, praised Holly Hunter's performance, saying this about her, quote, "It's something of a revelation. Her short, feisty, socially gauche, aggressive, compulsive character may be the most intricately layered portrait of a career woman that contemporary Hollywood has ever given us," end quote. Well, now, 30 years after Broadcast News, it's inspiring a look back and questions about everything from journalistic ethics to the battle between flash and substance and more. In this hour, we've invited seasoned broadcast professionals from our community to join the conversation. Coming all the way from her suite upstairs is my colleague, Elisa Orlando, Senior Vice President of Television and News for WXXI. Thanks for coming down.
Thank you for inviting me.
Rebecca LeClaire is a public relations professional and a longtime former television news anchor and reporter. Great to have you here, Rebecca.
My pleasure.
And Adam Chodak is anchor and managing editor for WROC-TV. Adam, welcome to the broadcast.
Lovely to be here.
Well, I had a chance to go back and watch last week, and let me read what The Ringer, a long piece in The Ringer, they went back, they talked to James L. Brooks, and they talked to Holly Hunter and Albert Brooks, and they wrote a piece kind of about a number of things related to the film. But I want to read what they had to say about it, and we'll get our panelists' take. They wrote, quote, "Broadcast News, the romantic comedy drama released on December 16, 1987, is among the best movies ever made about journalism. On first watch, it seems like a classic love triangle in a workplace setting. On the second watch, Broadcast News is a classic love triangle in a workplace setting that also functions as a study of rare, fascinating, ambitious characters. And on the third watch, Broadcast News is a classic love triangle in a workplace setting with an accurate and hilarious look at the media hellscape as it was then and is now. In other words, it's a masterpiece," end quote. What do you think, Elisa?
I think it is a masterpiece. I think it is a very, like many Brooks movies, it's a complicated movie with people who are not exactly one way or the other. And I think that it captured what was happening in news at the time. I think it foretold some of the things that happened in news after that. And I think it is a very, to me, it was a masterpiece of about relationships, because it was about people that were having relationships with each other and very much with their careers and with their jobs. And I thought it was sweeping at the time. It was thrilling for me to see it as a really young reporter and as a producer, because I loved the fact that they were profiling a producer as a main character at that time. And I think it is a masterpiece. It holds up.
I think it does hold up. That's the one thing I was going to ask. Does it hold up? I do agree with that. Rebecca, what do you think?
Yeah, there's so many themes that still are relevant today. You know, the work-life balance. Holly Hunter's character had none. And I think a
yes,
lot of
right.
people in this industry really struggle with that. But in order to achieve what she says or feels is success and her desire and her passion for news, it's a 24-hour job, really. And today it's no different, especially with technology. You can broadcast 24 hours a day unto yourself, by yourself. You don't even need a camera crew anymore. So I think that is really relevant these days.
Adam, you had a chance to see the film over the weekend. Does it hold up to you? What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, it's a little dystopian in its outlook, which it serves its purpose because it is there to show what was happening in the business. And I think it did that. At the same time, I was kind of jazzed. I was excited to see the scenes in which they're putting together a newscast. We still go through that at the national and local level. So, yes, I know they were trying to get across a fairly negative point, but I looked at it and I said, we do some really good stuff and we have fun doing it and there are complications. But I was pretty psyched having watched it again.
Well, we're going to go in a lot of different directions this hour. And listeners, again, you don't have to have seen Broadcast News, I think, to appreciate some of the themes. Because we're going to talk about ethics. We're going to talk about the industry. And these questions are still so relevant today. We've got some clips. And the movie can be funny, by the way.
Yeah,
it's got some really great scenes.
Way beyond the sweating scene.
The sweating scene is so good. But I'm going to ask Adam a serious question right out of the gate, because one of the big themes to me is James L. Brooks saw this push-pull flash substance, and the characters, the men in the movie, represent the dichotomy there. Albert Brooks plays Aaron, a longtime reporter, a great journalist, an excellent writer, but not quite the beautiful male anchor type. And so he doesn't quite get the job that he wants, even though he's doing the actual journalistic work. Whereas Tom, played by William Hurt, knows next to nothing about next to anything, but does know how to read a prompter and is very good in those high-pressure moments. And maybe anchors are a little brighter than that, but I wonder, did that make you uncomfortable? And honestly, does that make you're a white male news anchor in 2018. How important is it to you to make sure people understand you're not just a face reading a prompter?
So when I was in Syracuse and I was in TV, my first TV job, there was a gentleman who was my colleague. He was my boss previously at the radio station there, Bill Carey, incredible, incredible journalist, incredible storyteller. And there was an opening for a anchoring position there. And I went to him, I said, look, I know I'm doing one man banding. I'm reporting right now. Should I do this? And he said to me, Adam, in his Bill Carey voice, he said, I think that anchors should really know how to anchor a station. That's all he said. And I got it. He basically said, get your feet wet. Know how to do your job. Know about how society works. And then sit in that chair. So I did. And fortunately, it worked out. I think there were points along my career where I regretted that. At the same time, I used this to say that there are people who just know how to anchor, the skills of anchoring, but they don't know how to be a journalist. And I think that there are two camps in our industry. It doesn't matter whether you're white or male or what have you, but there are two camps, and I'm so fortunate for that. So I look at that movie and I say, you know, I look at L. Brooks' character and I say, I think that you can be that and you can anchor. Unfortunately, there are folks out there who are more like Tom.
And you wouldn't want to be viewed that way, would you, though? Honestly. I mean, I know you personally, I know you professionally. You would not want to be viewed as sort of an empty suit who's good at reading a prompter.
No, absolutely. And that's the thing, what I like about the movie is James L. Brooks did his homework about the industry, but he also didn't stereotype them. I think there were parts of Tom that were good at what he did. He was very smooth on air. He was able to take complex topics and distill them. So there was talent behind the look. At the same time, I would have had the same fear that he had, which is at any moment he would have been seen as the emperor without any clothes.
Yeah, there's talent, but not a whole lot of journalistic knowledge.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, yeah. Given the ending.
Yeah. Rebecca, how do you feel about that, the way it pushed? But let me read something to you and get your thoughts on this. This is 1988, a cover story for People magazine titled Tom Brokaw Takes on Broadcast News, and asked the question that provided its own answer. Quote, the Oscar-bound hit has the networks fuming. Are TV news anchors really dumb, overpaid pretty boys with too much power? And the article went on to say that there is a parallel to be made, and CBS is firing 215 employees in 1987, which the movie mm-hmm. Broadcast News had a scene in which they're laying off. Mm-hmm. And the article also kind of talked about anchor mania for, quote, the gorgeous guys who read the nightly news, Tom Brokaw, Peter Jennings, and Dan Rather, end quote. I'd never met Peter Jennings, and I've never met Rather or Brokaw. I think they're more than just gorgeous guys who read the news, but how do you feel about that flash versus substance?
Yeah, I think you'll never get away from that stereotype of, they just read the news. A lot of people still have that. But I think, especially those of us in the industry, we know what it takes to put on a show. We also know what it takes to write a good piece of journalism. And you have to kind of mix both. I mean, especially if you're the anchor person, but you have to have the substance behind you. With Tom in that movie, if not for Jane feeding him information in his ear, yep. He would not have been able to do the Libya broadcast. But also, he was able to help Aaron's character, you know, try to become an anchor, because there is that delivery and it makes a difference when you're talking about TV. And, you know, somebody told me this a long time ago. with journalism, you got to get it right. The facts tell the story. But with TV, emotion is the way you share that story. So with TV, you can do that. Otherwise, it's just you just want to watch, read the article in the newspaper, and it's facts and figures. But with TV, there's emotion, and the anchor can really steer the show. So you've got to have the balance. I don't think, you know, anybody feels that Tom Brokaw or Peter Jennings or Dan Rather were just fluff and had to be fed all their information. If you've watched them, you know that they had substance. But there is still that stereotype. Will Ferrell in Anchorman, I mean, right. That did more damage, I think, to any of us in the broadcast news industry, because that made us look bad.
Mm. What do you think, Lisa?
Well, I, if I remember correctly, Dan Rather was well known for being emotional as an anchor person. And I think you're right, Rebecca, that that anchor people in general have to relate to the public, and I think that's what the character of Tom was doing. I did feel, though, I don't know of any network television anchors who came from the world of sports. He was a sports anchor mm-hmm. in this movie before he came into news, and I'm not saying there hasn't been progression of careers, but I do feel that behind every anchor that sits at the desk, I see a journalist who's maybe worked their way up. They haven't just sort of dropped into the chair. But I do think that you're right, Rebecca, and you're right, Adam, to say that you have to be able to relate as a news anchor. And I think what Brooks did in this character is he filled Tom with insecurities that he liked to talk about. He made him completely relatable and emotional. He was easy to talk to. And so I think that's where you got the idea that the humanity of the position is really important, and it was important to Brooks. But I don't think, as a rule, that anchors are not empty heads.
Right. And don't you feel that he admitted his faults?
Yes.
Tom did.
Yeah,
he said, I'm not good. I don't know what I'm talking about, but if you help me, I can put together that piece. And it was interesting. His big piece that he produced was about date rape. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, that theme is still coming through 30 years later.
In fact, in the film, it was people in the room were like, wait, what is that? It's like date rape is like a new idea.
Yeah.
And
right.
That is the part that feels like the anachronism. That's interesting. In a minute, we're going to get to some of the clips, because there's a moment in that piece about the date rape piece that became very controversial in the world of broadcast news. Again, it's a fictional film, but the reason we're talking about it 30 years later are these ethical themes and these journalistic standards themes that really carry through today. But we'll also take some of your phone calls, and I see the first one. I'll grab that in a second. Listeners, if you want to call the program, you can do it toll-free, 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Bernard in Fairport, haven't heard from you in a while. Bernard, nice to have you back on the program.
Nice to hear you again. I think a discussion of journalism these days has to have a discussion of capitalism first. It seems to me that, as a matter of fact, if I were going to run for the president, I would like to buy journalists so that they work for me. Look at this new book that's just been published about the president. He's making a lot of money. And it isn't has anything to do, in my mind, about is it right? Is it sensible? Whatever. It's that it's just going to make a lot of money, because it basically is curing to people who just want to read, if you will, interesting, or however you want to say it, without having any real honesty and logic and so on and so forth. So I think that's the problem. Capitalism has taken over journalism, and that's sad.
Bernard, thanks for the phone call. I'm going to start with our colleague from the same building here at WXXI, Lisa Orlando. What do you make of that?
Well, I think actually the movie actually makes something of that. There's an important scene in the movie when there are layoffs at the network.
Yep.
And there's, I think, if I remember correctly, there's a line where the anchor, played by Jack Nicholson, the network news anchor, comes in to make things a little easier to comfort people.
And he says, such a good scene.
And he says that this is all because they couldn't program Wednesday nights. The idea being that, you know, they had to find cuts somewhere because they were losing money. And I think that in Evan, in the organization where we work in nonprofit journalism, it's a little bit of a different matter. But I think that scene in the movie definitely shows where the role that money plays, at least in news, in media, And I think the other theme, of course, that comes up, I think the Ringer article called it theater over fact. The idea that there are so many more journalists, that what journalism is now and how money is made and why a book that's written about somebody would be considered in the same maybe conversation as a conversation about journalism. These are all things that, you know, I think the movie sort of foretold a little bit.
And you've been in different newsrooms with different settings, not just public broadcasting your entire
right.
career. Do you see and feel a difference? This is not a Homer question. We always feel at WX. XXI, we like the model we have here. But I honestly, you know, looking at the landscape, do you feel a difference?
You know, when I was working in commercial television news, I did not feel that much of a difference. I felt that there was a great big separation between the journalism we were trying to accomplish and our advertisers. I'm not saying that there wasn't a relationship there, because it's a very circular thing. One is dependent on the other. But in this community, when I was working in local commercial television news, I did not feel that sensibility so much. And even I worked at the newspaper at Democrat and Chronicle for a brief period, and even there, you know, we never saw the salespeople, for example. We didn't really go to their floor, and they didn't come to our floor very much. And that was a sort of a guiding principle about that separation. Mm-hmm. I think in local communities that separation still exists. I think that journalists and people that have to raise the money for journalism understand it better than we think that we do. It's easy to make it into a caricature.
Yeah, I would agree. At the same time, I think that capitalism has made that separation vulnerable in certain circumstances mm-hmm. with companies. And you have now venture capitalists buying stations. It wasn't what it once was, where you had local ownership. So even though you might have companies like mine, I'll give mine a plug, Nexstar, they are a national company, but they keep that separation very clear. There are companies that don't. I think when I look back at this, I always find it interesting that the history of news started with radio. And when they started to broadcast news over the radio, there was no thought at that time of making money on this. It was seen as a public service. No, it would boggle the minds of the first broadcast journalists that people are making money hand over fist on this business. And it's important to remember, too, as an aside for whatever it's worth, that the broadcast signals are still public and they're rented by companies. It's just a reminder that, yes, capitalism plays a role. At the same time, we have to remember that our duty is to public service. And that's why it's important to stand by the ethical guidelines set forth by the RTNDA organization, which is the Radio Television News Directors Association, because we have to mind our own store.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Rebecca?
Well, journalism is journalism, and I agree with that. If you live by your ethics and you're true to yourself and your facts and your stories, there's no question about it. Now, how do you make a living doing that? These days, you can, you know, write from home and, you know, start your own blog or start your own website. You don't necessarily need an entire news organization. It's a lot easier with an entire news organization, and that takes money. So we're never going to escape unless somebody, you know, could just give us millions of dollars from the sky and let us do our work. It's still always going to be tied to that capitalism question. But I think, and I truly believe this in this community, that people are dedicated to their craft and working through that, and like Alyssa was saying, you know, staying separate and doing our job. I never felt that way working for Channel 10 that I ever had to defer to a client. I knew that if there was ever a story I was going to do against an advertiser, I was still going to do it. Mm-hmm. I'd have to go to the manager first and say, hey, by the way, I'm going to do this story about this company, but they would let us do it.
Mm-hmm. I think what I hear you both saying is the difference between the people that are doing the journalism, the journalists themselves, and the organizations or the companies. I think there have been changes over the years. I haven't worked in commercial media in a long time, so I can't really speak to, you know, what might be happening in companies. But I do think that the people, the journalists in the community, still have the standards, absolutely still have the standards. And I think as long as that's the case, we probably will be okay.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Let's listen to a clip, one of my favorite lines in the movie, Holly Hunter, and I had a few quibbles with the way the movie ended, but for the most part, I thought they did her character right, because she was this brilliant, you know, driven woman, and You know, this is a scene in which she is talking to who was, I guess, a news director of the network heads when the breaking news with Libya was happening.
Yes, it was the head of the network.
Head of the network.
They were at a party, so he made the assignments himself instead of her news manager.
Okay, and so she doesn't agree with it. She thinks Aaron, who's played by Albert Brooks, who is a longtime field reporter, is the journalist who should be handling this story, who should be given this chance, jump on the desk and lead the coverage. And they're saying, no, it's going to be Tom, the good-looking new guy, played by William Hurt. And so here is the debate they have, which culminates in my favorite line of the movie.
Tom's not ready for the job you're about to hand him. Not near ready. Not by the longest shot. Now, Aaron spent 6 weeks in Tripoli. He's interviewed Gaddafi. He reported on the 81 story. I think he's essential to do the job we're capable of. And I think it's my responsibility to tell you that.
Okay, that's your opinion. I don't agree.
It's not opinion.
You're just absolutely right. And I'm absolutely wrong. It must be nice to always believe you know better. To always think you're the smartest person in the room.
No, it's awful.
It's awful.
No, it's awful. She delivers it so unironically, dead serious, just a... Oh. I thought Holly Hunter was fabulous in that film. I don't think for them that was a bit of a plot contrivance, don't you think? Oh, they happen to be at a party, and the network head's going to make this call.
Yeah, and you know the guy who played that role was a journalist himself who was also laid off from a network.
Oh.
He says
no
because
Ouch.
They were bringing another. Kid. I think I can't remember his name. I think his name might be Peter Hacks or Peter Jacks.
Oh.
He's a network news correspondent, and they gave him that role. So Brooks, of course, he loves the news business. So he was trying. He was always trying to throw in, those kinds of little.
But
yeah, that's
but
a contrivance.
even in the network world, but especially on the local level, I mean, it's nice that the owners or network heads are there. They're going to defer to the Randy Gorbans of the world, the news directors, I would think. Right? Don't you guys think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And look what happens at the end of that scene. So Tom goes and anchors, but without Jane feeding him all the information. And she actually calls Aaron and gets information from them. So it's a team effort to make the guy that's out there on the desk.
But the smart guy gets no credit.
No.
Albert Brooks' reporter character is sitting at home feeding information.
Right. But none of them can not do it.
Right.
She's upset, but she has to go and make the best broadcast that she can. And then there's a great scene of him. He's of Albert Brooks sitting in his apartment. I'm singing and I'm reading. And he's trying so hard not to turn on the television. He can't help but help her. That's what I love about the movie, the relationship they have with their career.
And
their
he says, I say it here, it comes out there, which is another great line. By the way, producer Megan Mack tells us that it's Peter Hackies, who was an NBC News correspondent for 30 years, who's playing the network head there. By the way, Peter Hackies in his real life job was let go in the, quote, search for more pretty men. Ouch there. Tim in Pittsford writes, what does your panel think of the fact that in Europe they call their anchors news readers? He says, also, I thought I heard Elisa say that sports commentators don't usually become anchors, but what about Rich Funky, Kutchko, Gruba? I think you meant on the network level.
On the network level, yes. But yes, I know Rich and Mark and
John,
John very well.
Oh, yeah. But I think on the network level, I don't know of any sports anchors who became... I
mean, Josh Elliott.
Josh Costas. I mean, I know he's not really news, but I mean, he does a lot.
He did evolve.
But Josh, even Josh Elliott, though, is not in the main chair at 6 p.m., which is still.
That's true.
You might, we can have a whole other discussion about whether that is sort of an endangered species, but I take Tim's point. Now, he says, what does the panel think about in Europe? They're called news readers.
That's that stereotype that we just, do what we're told, and here's your script, just go out and read it. And that's so not like Rochester News, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think obviously in America, at least, it's a pejorative term. People will say that jokingly in jest. But I think that that title and Tom's role in the whole Libyan crisis at least proves one point that I think he was right on. You have to sell the news. It's not like the 1950s where you just read it and you're the only source out there, and so people have to listen to you. We are competing against thousands of different types of outlets. So Tom is right in that sense. Obviously, you don't want to fake cry, but there is a bit of salesmanship here because you do want to win over the audience. And I think that it can be ethically done because storytelling is entertainment in a sense, but it's also a great way to transmit information.
Okay. Go ahead, Rebecca.
Well, remember, Aaron got on the news desk on that Saturday night, and he was sweating to death. I mean, he will never sit at that desk again. He knows it, because he could not handle being the anchor. So to your point, there is structure there that has to be met, and the viewers will not tune in if they see somebody there falling apart at the anchor desk.
Listeners, if you want to go out and pick up broadcast news to watch it based on this conversation, you will see two of the best physical comedy scenes. One of them is the sweating scene. Also, the running of the tape scene with Joan Cusack is one of the great scenes. So the movie sort of has some good comedy there. We're due for our only break of the hour. We'll come back to your phone calls. Our guests in studio are talking about 30 years since the release of the film Broadcast News, which got nominated for a bunch of Oscars and sparked a lot of conversations about the power of broadcast news on the network level and journalistic standards, ethics, and more. Elisa Orlando is Senior Vice President of Television and News for WXXI. Rebecca LeClaire, a public relations professional and former television news anchor and reporter. And Adam Chodak is the anchor and managing editor for WROC-TV. Your phone calls and maybe even a new music network news theme when we come back. Coming up in our second hour, it's our dialogue on disability and this headline getting a lot of attention. Autism rates have stabilized for the first time in decades. Now, it's just a few years and that could change, but it also could mean that we are getting a firmer picture of the landscape of autism. What does the research tell us? What does the study say? What's going on locally? What should you know? That's all next hour on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. That's our new music theme. That's our very serious news theme. Now, that's from the film Broadcast News, in which the network head is listening to a sample of what music guys want to be the new night, the network news theme at night. And actually, that's pretty similar to what we hear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Pretty.
Not bad.
Do you like it? Would you use it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny. We do have Ferdinand J. Smith in town. And
yes,
he's creative.
Yes, I'm sure.
Right, I'm sure he's
Ferdinand J., I'm sure, can do something.
A number
like that.
Of news
oh, yeah.
themes.
Oh, yeah. All right, let me grab Linda in Penfield on the line. Thanks for waiting, Linda. Go ahead.
Hi, everybody. Thank you very much for featuring Broadcast News. It's one of my favorite movies, and I think it's one of the most underappreciated movies ever that's so well acted. And I wanted to ask, well, it's to the panel, but also to Rebecca. And I was wondering, Ms. LeClaire, if you've noticed any change in the types of topics or tenor of news stories being covered at Channel 10 now that they've been bought by Sinclair Broadcasting. And I guess the broader question is, have any of you or can you speak about the impact of Sinclair Broadcasting upon local news or how news is covered here in general? Thank you.
Well, I could just tell you that Channel 10 WHEC-TV is owned by Hubbard Broadcasting, and that's a family-owned independent company, so it's not affiliated with Sinclair.
Mm-hmm. Adam and I both worked for Channel 13 when Sinclair took over, and you might have seen recent news stories about that. And Adam and I are not here to cast aspersions on any local colleagues who work so hard, and some people have said, oh, you're copying. Look, I've worked with people in that newsroom who have decades of journalistic experience, and they're working very hard. If you're concerned about influence on the news, I think those concerns are valid. I also think there's people working very, very hard to produce local journalism, and that continues to be their focus. And I hope for everybody that continues to be the focus. Is that fair?
Absolutely. I so appreciate that she's a critical viewer, and you have a choice.
Absolutely, yes. We'll get back to your phone calls in just a second, but Rebecca LeClaire hinted earlier at one of the big journalistic ethical themes of the movie. In fact, one of the big dramatic hinge points of the movie Broadcast News comes when Tom, the news anchor, he decides he wants to do a news story, and it's on something called date rape. Now, at the time, this is 1987, and the movie was being made in 1985-86, released in late 1987. That was not really all that common at all. And so The film kind of portrays shows the piece that he does. He's interviewing a woman who was raped by an acquaintance. It's very emotional. And the woman he's interviewing is crying. And then in the piece, it cuts back to Tom, played by William Hurt, and he's crying. Now, Albert Brooks's character, the seasoned journalist, doesn't like it. He feels like, you know, we are making drama out of this. We should be doing news. But Holly Hunter, the producer, admits. She said, you know, I'm a little conservative. I might not have done it, but it got me. It was emotional. It was real. Later in the film, Albert Brooks' character realizes that was a one-camera shoot. And he says to Holly Hunter, ask yourself, they had one camera on the shoot. How could we have seen him crying? And Holly Hunter goes back to look at the raw tapes and sees that he sort of ginned up tears for that moment. And she confronts him right as they're about to go on vacation together as a couple. And let's go ahead and listen to this clip here, because this is one of the really tough but important conversations in the film.
I saw the taped outtakes of the interview with the girl. I know you acted your reaction after the interview.
It's verboten, huh? I thought since I almost did it the first time, but... Well, I get you. That's not the reason you're not coming.
Of course it's the reason. It's terrible what you did.
We disagree on how god-awful it was. Why don't you come with me? We'll disagree and we'll get a tan at the same time.
Jesus, if you're going to be glib about this, I'm going to lose it!
Jane, keep it down. Jane.
I was up all night and... It made me ill.
That's better.
You could get fired for things like that.
We got promoted for things like that.
Working up tears for a news piece cutaway? You totally crossed the line between what is ethical and what is garbage.
They keep moving a little sucker, don't they?
That, the line where she says, you could get fired for that, and he says, I got promoted for that, is a powerful indictment. And and I understand Brooks is making drama. I think it's a warning. I think that is a real warning to broadcasters to be very careful with that. What do you think, Elisa?
I think that's exactly what it is. And I think the next line, they keep moving the little sucker, don't they, was prescient, really, because, you know, well, look around.
I'm not going to say that I've never met anybody who's ever done anything unethical. But I will say, Rebecca LeClaire, I've never seen anybody go that far, faking tears.
Right, faking the tear, because we've all had to do that cutaway shot after the interview is over, because most of us do not have the luxury of a two-camera shoot.
That's
when
right.
We're going out there, and these
days, we don't all do Adam interviews, you know, where we get two cameras
right.
And we have to make edits,
right.
So we have to cover those edits,
you know, and these days it's one-man band, so you're doing it all yourself, and you have to actually reset the camera for yourself to do that cutaway. But the faking of the tears, I don't know anybody who would have stooped to that. There's another scene where, remember, they're out in the jungle and they're trying to take a shot. And they're like, wait, put the shoe back on. He's just like, no, let it just happen. And, you know, so there's that battle.
Jane yells at the cameraman. And I say, I don't like the term cameraman. The photojournalist, the video journalist, for telling someone to put on their shoes, because Jane says, we're not here to stage news.
Right.
And I loved that scene.
Right.
Because the tears was a dramatic vehicle, and I've never seen quite that far. But what we do see in news of all levels is, hey, you know, maybe now you can walk down the hall. Maybe now you can sit and do this. And even that I get a little uncomfortable with, because I usually tell people, just do whatever you would be doing if we weren't here. But but what Jane's saying is, Holly Hunter's character is saying that even if we ask you to put on your shoes and it's as simple as that, we can't tell you to do that. We cannot stage anything. What do you think?
Well, and I agree with that. We've all been there when we've had to, well, we've got to come up with some video to cover our voiceover track. And that gets a little tense. But I think, again, it goes back to ethics and journalism 101. You know, do what is right, do what's real and true to the story, and don't make it up. End of story.
Mm-hmm. Adam?
Yeah, I think when it comes to staging, look, I'm a little bit more liberal in that if they are going to be putting a tire on a car, I'm happy to say, look, can you just wait till we're set up?
Right.
They're going to be putting the tire on the car. It doesn't jeopardize, in my mind, the standards that we've set. So I'm a little more lax because the video is so important. I think, to Elisa's point, I love that line too, and I took note of it, where he said that they keep moving the little sucker. To me, that spoke to me not about the emotional needle, but about the opinion needle, because I think that needle has been moved so drastically over the last 10 years, where now journalists are commentators and they're still called journalists. Mm-hmm. And we see that both at the national and local level.
Right.
And
I agree.
That needle mm-hmm. has been moved. And so the emotional aspect of it didn't really speak to me as prescient. I think what he was doing was summarizing what was already happening in the industry. But if we then apply that movement to opinion versus journalism, I think then you look at the movie and say, wow, that saw what was coming down the pike.
Mm. Well, and that article in The Ringer used this phrase, you know, theater is more important than fact. And I think that's what he was speaking to in that particular scene, and that's what was coming. It came in various forms, whether it's a journalist as a commentator, whether it's, I think the sheer number of hours of news on television now is so different than it was in 1987 that we were bound to have some things head in this direction. And I'm no film critic, but I think in that moment in the film, what I felt watching it was, you know, right up until that point, you think maybe Tom is a guy who will come along as a journalist. He just needs her help. You know, she's just going to guide him and he's going to be able to work hard and become a respected journalist. And in that moment, I kind of felt like, nope, he just knows what he is and he's going to mm-hmm. get ahead because of it.
Mm-hmm. I was so glad, by the way, that they didn't use one of their multiple endings. And I watched this weekend. There's the alternate ending is he runs after her and gets in the car with her and then they kiss and then they hug and the sun sets. And I'm going, oh my gosh, you've got this strong character, a strong woman who doesn't need a man. Why would you end the film like that? I'm so glad they did not.
I could have left it right in the cab when she's leaving.
Absolutely. We didn't need to fast forward.
7 years later, yeah.
When agree. She's leaving, yeah. I wanted a tense ending where she says, I made a choice, and the choice is I'm never going to be with a person who's going to fake tears or compromise standards. One other question before I get to some other points. The interesting line that we didn't talk about in that scene was the network anchor character played by William Hurt says, well, I almost did it the first time. He's saying, I almost cried when I'm interviewing a woman about her date rape experience. What's the problem with me actually crying and using that video and juxtaposing it there? Because if I almost did it, and you know what? I think some people, there's at least some, who would say, well, is it that bad? Is that that? That's what made, I thought, it was a very clever addition to that scene, even though I don't agree with him at all.
Right. And there's a line earlier, too, when... After she first sees the story, they go in the closet, you know, where they had their little meetings, and she admits to him, she says, the piece moved me. She said, that shot of you crying might not have been my choice. I might not have used that shot, but she said, I'm too conservative about those things. So even then there was this sensibility, I think, that Brooks was saying that there's a conversation now. There's the word conservative, right? So should you be more liberal or conservative with the use of emotion like that? And but what he did was indefensible. It doesn't matter if he almost cried. He didn't cry.
Yeah, I kind of took that line when she said, I wouldn't have done that, or mm-hmm. I'm a little more conservative, meaning it's not about you. To
right.
Tom,
it's
the anchor
story, right?
It's about
point.
The story,
right.
And I think in the 30 years since then, we have involved the journalist way more in the stories.
Too much.
Our management mm-hmm. kind of has required it, and look at the way we can do selfies now. I just took a selfie of us here at the table doing our broadcast. I would have done that in 30 years ago. I wouldn't have really been a thought of it. But we didn't have the technology to do it then either. But we definitely have inserted ourselves into the stories more.
Yeah, and there's a line. I think you can do that with an acceptable level of standards. At the same time, what he did was exploitative of mm-hmm. the story.
Right.
Instead of trying to show your work in getting the story, which could be seen as transparent. If done correctly, what he did was exploitative.
Yeah, and here's The Ringer talking about exactly this idea where journalists become the story. Quote, 30 years later, watching broadcast news might inspire even more questions of life imitating film. Watching a film about an industry that has since become the old guard allows us to see parallels among today's ideas about new media. The movie Broadcast News predicted that the way we feel about the news would become the news itself, and that there was real drama to be found in how much the people who make the news care about it. Let's not forget one of Aaron's lines delivered with sarcasm, which proves truer than he'd like to admit. Journalists are now the real story. End quote. And I agree, generally shouldn't be, and too often become the story. And by the way, when it comes to kind of standards, I always think of not to exploit emotion, but emotion and personal story, anecdote, can be useful if they're built on a foundation of facts and data. And I think that that balance can be difficult, but that's what we try to do here on Connections, mm-hmm. WXXI, and that's part of our standards. All right, so let's get back to some listener comments. And by the way, if you're just joining us, the film, 30 years old this week, Broadcast News, was in theaters in January 1988, ended up nominated for a lot of Oscars, and still viewed as one of the great journalism films of all time. It starred Holly Hunter, William Hurt, Albert Brooks, among others, and our guests in studio talking about that, Elisa Orlando, Senior Vice President of Television and News for WXXI, Rebecca LeClaire, who you used to know as a television news and anchor and reporter, and now the owner of LeClaire Communications, and Adam Chodak, anchor and managing editor for WROC-TV. Jerry writes to us and says, what specifically are journalism's ethics? She says, do all internet news sources have them, and how do we know when an alleged news reporting source is participating accepted journalistic ethics? And she says, by the way, this discussion is very important and deserves to be repeated. Thank you. So understanding journalistic ethics, there's a lot of different sources, as Adam pointed out, thousands now. I don't always know the answer.
Get NPR's guiding principles in front of me.
Oh, good.
Smart.
How would you answer that to Jerry, Lisa?
Well, I'm not sure that every journalism enterprise has guiding principles or explicitly stated ethics. That much I can say. I'm just not knowledgeable enough about the entire industry. Mm-hmm. I can say that NPR has a very well-thought-out, I think, set of guidelines and principles, things we've been talking about, fairness, accuracy, honesty, respect. There are a few other things in NPR that I think may not be part of every enterprise. Independence, impartiality, accountability, transparency. The one that I love from NPR that we live by here is completeness. You must tell the story whole. The story has to be complete. It goes way beyond fair and balanced. So I know that in public media we do feel that way. I feel that journalists working in the community, working in the industry for the most part, at least especially local journalists. I can't say enough about local journalists, because people that get in, you don't get into this business necessarily at the local level because you want to end up like Tom necessarily. Not everybody has those aspirations. Some people do. But I think that local journalists, for the most part, do. The people, the individuals, do live by principles of truth and accuracy and fairness. And I imagine you guys feel that way.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. RTNDA has a very similar code of ethics that they turned into a little pocket-sized edition that you could carry around. I did for years until I lost my ethics. no, it really is very similar. I love that idea of completeness, and I think that really should be what we strive for, instead of saying we got the left, we got the right, we got this side, we got that side. Really, completeness is what we seek at a local level. I think the biggest threat is not so much any mandates from the corporate structure or anything like that. It's just time. We are pulled in so many different directions with social media. A lot of us are one-man banding now, which I did for years. I think that is the biggest threat, because we want it to be complete, but how much can you pack in a day? So if I could offer one suggestion for the industry, is just give us a little bit more time to put these things together.
On the air as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All of us felt those pressures, because, you know, you're expected to be tweeting, putting things on Facebook, and producing your story for the 5, 6, 7, and 11, and you have to have a different angle each time. It's almost undue pressure to be able to do all of that and double check your sources. I mean, it really weighs heavily on those journalists, and we're doing our best that we can. But you talk about completeness, you know, just even two sides to the stories. Well, there's usually five sides to every story, and whether you can get all five stories. I can still remember, I started my career, I graduated in 86, so I started my career, you know, in 87, 88, I was just that new journalist out there. I came here to Rochester in 88. And that was back when there were weekly protests outside of Genesee Hospital,
right?
If you recall.
I remember.
Over the abortion issue. And it got so bad. We had so much criticism from both sides. They would time our sound bites. You know, we'd go out and do the interviews and get both sides. And once you produced your piece and it aired, the folks on both camps would time it and say, well, you gave them 18 seconds and you only gave us 14 seconds. We want you to, you know, retract that story.
You owe us 4 seconds, yeah.
So, I mean, that's how difficult it can be. You can't make everybody happy. You have to be happy within yourself as a journalist. And I always said, if I can go home at night and sleep well knowing I did a good job, that's I lived up to my ethics.
So let me ask the folks who have been most recently in commercial, and Adam is still there, about the subject of sweeps and franchises. I never liked it when I worked in commercial television news because I thought it sent the wrong signal to the viewer that the big stories happen 3 months out of the year. But I understand why, too, because sweeps, which is measuring ratings, only happen in essentially February, May, and November. July doesn't always view with the same kind of counting. But anyway, I understand sort of the pragmatics of that. And what I like now is I look at Adam's pieces. He has an Adam interview series, which is year long. I mean, you don't just time those for sweeps, which I'm really glad to see. But if you ever had a boss come to you and say, hey, we're going to do this franchise. When I say franchise, you know, Sinclair used to do a waste watch thing, like with the complete with like, you know, scary graphics and things like that, that I would push back on sometimes or say I'm not comfortable with the framing or this theme or whatever. And that led to some hard conversations. Has that happened to you? And in the context of ethics, how do you feel about sweeps, franchises, et cetera?
Well, I think sweeps done right can be an opportunity to get that time to complete a story because they will
That's
give
fair.
You several days to
right.
do it. So mm-hmm. there have been several sweeps pieces. I did one on sex trafficking, and I was able to actually think about the piece, take my time interviewing the women, and I was more rewarded by that piece than almost any other day turn that I've ever done. So I think it can provide an opportunity. At the same time, there are pieces that are in our industry, sweepsy, which are basically built just to get viewership. And that's when your own standards come in and you can push back and you can say, you know what, I just don't feel comfortable doing that. I haven't had to do that, but I have seen it. So it is out there. And I think that the way we're measuring viewers will change sweeps over time. Right now, we're already in it. We're going to see cable companies give us numbers, satellite companies give us numbers, and that's going to be every single day. So we aren't going to have the book much anymore. So I'm going to be interested to see whether we even have those special months 5 years from now. Mm-hmm.
When I was at Channel 10, we had daily observations of how your tweets were doing, how your responses were on Facebook, mm-hmm. and you had to kind of live or die by that. I mean, it wasn't like you're going to get fired that day, but you know, the top five people were listed up, look at these people. And we all have been there that we know that if we tweet a story about a dog or a baby, it's going to get a lot more attention than the tax code or county budget, you know. But we have to live by those dynamics, and it's tough.
All right, let me grab another phone call. This is Bonnie. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yes, hi. A couple of things. One is I've seen situations portrayed in various kinds of media dealing with broadcast media to begin with, and in which it looks to me like, and I think this has been talked about before, that for women, it looks like a beauty contest. Like, you know, and in fact, I saw one a few years ago that was showed women who were graduating to be broadcast journalists. And I swear to God, you could not tell. The only difference you could tell was how, you know, they all had long, straight hair. It was either blonde or dark brown. And it was amazing. And I know that's not absolutely what happens all the time, but I think that's kind of another one of those things that women have to deal with that shouldn't be. I look at other countries and their broadcast people, I think, are more varied sometimes. That's number two quickly here is that in terms of journalism itself, I think that one of the things I think with journalism is a lot of people who are in journalism come from middle-class backgrounds and they go to college and all that has a positive thing, except that it also has to recognize that a lot of these issues that come up, poverty, racism, and et cetera, aren't things that a lot of these folks have experienced themselves in any real depth. You know, we all get little problems sometimes, but I mean in real depth. So it's important to know how to deal with that. I think more rounded education thing. But I also think having people who in journalism who actually are active in their own communities, yeah. not just as journalists, but active in their, because that's one of the best ways, and over time you can really, really get a feel for these issues and know how to frame questions. And Bill Moyers is my real example.
All right. Well, Bonnie, I appreciate that. And I'll just say, take it from a white man with a microphone. There's enough of us in the world. I'm with you, the importance of diversity mm-hmm. and being intentional about that.
Well, and the article in The Ringer that talked about broadcast news did touch on this a little bit. They said, you know, that white middle-class people, this is what this movie was about, white middle-class people, and that really They were going to report on the stories that they understood, that we might report on the stories that we understand and not on other things. And I think that Bonnie really touches on something there.
I do too. Yeah, Rebecca?
But I think over the 30 years since that movie came out, that there is an effort to try. I don't think we've been too successful in making everything diverse. We need more women in upper management. That is clear. I think, we showed her as a very strong producer, and there are a lot of great producers out there, but we need higher ups as well.
Yeah.
So it's just an ongoing battle.
Can I just say, by the way, I love the fact that one of the main characters, Holly Hunter, is a producer, and you see the value of a great producer, the great people behind the scenes. I'm looking at Rob Braden through the glass and Megan Mack and the people who do this every day and get such little credit to the extent that anything good ever happens on the show, it's usually the people behind the glass, and the flubs are from the guy with the microphone. And that is true in so many different newsrooms, to the extent that Adam Chodak's wife could have been here if she were more available. If she were available, I would have chosen her over you. Because you married the producer you worked with.
A lot of people say that. She was a powerhouse producer. She went right from Syracuse to Boston. WCVB, the top station there, is the morning producer. She was a powerhouse. And obviously, Evan and I both saw a lot of similarities between Holly Hunter's character and her. And what I'll just say is that what I love is the cultural message of this movie, which I see in my wife and Holly Hunter's character, which is they never sacrifice their profession for whatever else was going on.
Right.
Because they believed in themselves and they believed in what they were doing, and nothing was going to knock them off course.
Which is why she couldn't ride off into the sunset with them at the end of the movie.
Exactly.
Thank goodness they didn't
keep
end
her
the
in
movie.
The cab.
Yeah,
just keep
you don't
her in
need
the cab.
That. Thanks very much to our panel here. Adam Chodak from WROC-TV. See you on the air there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rebecca LeClaire now, the owner of LeClaire Communications. Thanks for being here, Rebecca.
Thanks, Evan.
And Elisa Orlando, I'll see you upstairs.
Okay,
downstairs,
see you
wherever
later.
You are. You're all over the place. With WXXI News, she is the Senior Vice President of Television and News. Short break, much more Connections coming up.